a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos, Tom Bettis with you this morning. We are taking your calls. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. You don't want to delay, though. This is a short show, a shortened version of the KSL Greenhouse. And reminder, we will be back next week from 8 to 11, so you can get your questions in then. And you can also check us out on podcast and check out an episode there if you have some questions.
We did put up that extra podcast last week on canning safety if folks are interested. You know, it is that time of year. My mother-in-law called and said, hey, I've got extra tomatoes, you know, and we're going to start putting them up. And so if you're doing that, please be safe and make sure that you're using well-vetted, you know, researched recipes and not what grandma did back in the 1950s.
Yeah, because, especially on tomatoes.
Yeah, especially tomatoes.
And I did actually post on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page a picture of those big rainbow heirloom tomatoes that you and I were talking about. Let's go back to our text lines. There we go. I can spit it out. This is Mark in West Jordan. He'd like to know how to overseed his lawn to make it thicker and repair damaged areas from weeds. He says, what do I do to prepare? When should I do it? And any tips for success?
Aerate it. And even though you may not have a really thick thatch layer, you aerate to pull those plugs out so that you get good soil contact, seed to soil contact. And depending on how damaged the lawn is, I might go in with almost 4 pounds per 1,000 square feet of grass seed. And mm-hmm. I just use a good either fescue or Kentucky bluegrass mix. You can pick those up from hardware stores, from farm stores. There are seed dealers like Granite Seed down in Lehigh that will also have some mixes you can look at. Great Basin Turf, IFA. So lots of places to get seed. And if you cannot water daily to get that seed going, I would wait until late October or early November and spread the seed then when it's too cold for it to immediately germinate. And then it will germinate in the spring with the moisture that we hopefully get and make it easier to get it going.
All right. Next listener says they had a large tree planted by a professional landscape company a month ago. Upon closer inspection, they realized they had left a wire cage on it, and they want to know, is that going to present issues or problems down the road? Should they try and dig down and remove it?
What they could do is remove the soil from around the perimeter of the root ball mm-hmm. and get some wire cutters. I mean, thick. We're talking like the high school lock-style wire cutters.
Ooh,
or
okay.
Something like a Dremel or a, you know, to get those off. And you don't need to completely remove the basket, but I would go down a good, a foot to maybe 18 inches and remove the basket from the midpoint, because the roots on the bottom of that root ball are damaged when you move that tree around, and the roots that are going to anchor the tree come out from the midsection. And so what you would do is dig down and remove that basket and the twine from the trunk and then get a couple of stakes. And then you want some good, you know, pine, like ponderosa pine stakes or T-posts off to the side that you then anchor that tree to those stakes, and you wrap a cotton cloth around the trunk so you don't damage it, and then put the ropes on the stake and to the trunk and put that, leave those stakes on for a year. Because when you remove that wire basket, if that tree moves in the wind, it can be greatly damaged if you get a 50 or 60 mile an hour wind. And so those stakes will hold it, but that wire basket should come off.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if they should call the professional arborist and have them come back.
Well, there's a strong part of the nursery industry that swears up and down almost religiously that that wire basket doesn't harm anything. Mm-hmm. But especially when you get burlap, the burlap's often treated with a copper compound that's antifungal and therefore rot resistant. And when you get that copper treated burlap with that galvanized steel wire basket, I've seen situations to where the tree grows well for 10 or 15 years, but it never really breaks out of that root ball. And then you get a big wind in, and there was a situation 10 or 15 years ago up at Weber State University that they lost over 100 spruce, and that exact thing happened. And so within the arborist's world, if you are a certified arborist, you always remove that wire basket, but you only remove the top half, leaving the bottom in the hole because that's not harming anything. Mm-hmm. And you stake the tree for 1 year.
Is this the best time to do that, or should they wait till spring?
If it was just planted, I would do it now, just while it's
warm.
Be less
damage. And
the roots haven't punched out of the root ball yet, and so I just get a shovel. It'll only take 20 or 30 minutes to remove the soil from around the sides if it was just planted, and then just carefully cut away that wire basket and use some scissors to get the burlap sack cut away in the twine.
Okay. Next listener says, is now the time to cut roots of roses that you need to replant in spring? And could you explain that process?
This is a complicated process. It's a little late. I would have preferred they cut those roots last May.
Okay.
So what you would do is go around about a third of the plant within about 4 or 5 inches of the base and just get a shovel and sever the roots on a third of the plant. What will happen is you have two thirds of the roots there to support it, but where you severed the roots, they will send out a lot of new roots where you severed it and very close to the base. And then you would go in and you make a circular trench around the rows about 6 inches, maybe a foot deep. And I would go probably 18 inches wide. And then you would just carefully remove this trench and undercut the rose plant. So you have a foot tall root ball and you're just working the shovel under there. But because you severed those roots, you have enough roots to move the rose to a new home and it will recover a lot faster and its survivability goes way up because you cut those roots in the spring. If you cut them now, it's trying to go dormant and you're not going to get the root growth. And so that they can wait, I would do this next spring and move it next November.
Okay. Next listener wants to know, is it too late to trim a boxwood hedge?
It is too late. There's an old adage, cliche, whatever you want to call it, in horticulture that you never prune in a month that ends in R for trees and shrubs. The reason being is that new growth will come out just as we're getting frost, and that new growth is heavily damaged, and it damages the bushes.
All right, let's take a call before we take a break, and that would be Mel in Sandy. Good morning, Mel. What is your question?
Good morning. Just looking at alternatives for lawns, kind of Googling around, looking at Zen gardens, Chinese gardens, and then kind of stumbling upon bamboo and not really finding much here in Utah or the U.S. What are your pros and cons on bamboo as a hedge or as a statement plant in your garden? Is that a possibility? And how come we don't find that much here?
It's not cold hardy for the most part. There are a few that are. And there's a Facebook group that's called, I believe, Hardy Trees and Palms. But if you go to Facebook and search Utah Hardy Trees and Palms, it'll bring up the group. And there are members that do have bamboos growing, but if you lived in the Southeast or the Pacific Northwest, there would be a whole multitude of bamboos that you could grow. But because we get below 0 degrees, 90% of what you would grow in these other areas will not survive here.
Well, that makes sense then. That's perfect. I just noticed some article from late Larry back in 2012, I think, or something, asking the readers and the listeners about their experience with bamboo. So
yeah, so I would join that group on Facebook, and there will be four or five people that have grown bamboos extensively that can give you some more help.
Thank you. And by the way, I started using a different watering method with the terracotta pots, gluing two up with the faces together, and then dig them and put them in the ground and just have a drip going into them. And even with this hot weather, it's been fantastic. Everything is growing super well.
Good.
All right.
So,
good to
and less
you.
Water.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks
for your show. It's been great.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. Next listener, Taunton, have you been up near the U lately?
I have not been near the U lately.
Okay. Well, their question is, do you know what kind of trees line the streets of the avenues by the U?
I don't. I would have to go up there and look. If you asked me about USU, Weber State, or BYU, or UVU, I could have told you.
Okay.
So I'm just not on the
East. Next time you're up by the U,
yes.
Check those out. Let's see. We already did overseeding. This person, though, also wanted to know, what is a good drought-tolerant grass to plant?
Well, that is a much more loaded question than anybody would realize, because the most drought-tolerant grasses don't make great lawns.
Mm.
The ones that are good lawn grasses or drought-tolerant are green from mid-May to mid-September, and then they go dormant, and they don't tolerate a lot of foot traffic. And so, you know, in a text, it's not enough information. And so when I get that, if someone wants a lawn for 6 or 9 months out of the year, I always tell them turf-type tall fescue, because it requires about 30% less water than Kentucky bluegrass.
They would also like to know if they should wait to apply pre-emergent till the spring.
Yes, you're wasting your money right now. I would rather you save the money and just put down the pre-emergent sometime in April of next year.
This next person wants to know... So some of these are extensions of other questions, so I don't want you to repeat everything you've said, but they say they need to kill some weedy grass and reseed their lawn this fall. But what's the best time to do it, and do we seed at the end of the month before the water turns off, or later right before it snows?
We missed late August. It's mid to late August is the time you put the seed down if you're going to have irrigation until mid-October.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you wait until late October or November and put the seed down then and let Mother Nature do her thing so that the seed germinates in the spring.
Next person says they live in a 55-plus community and the landscaping company has fallen short. Okay, I don't know that the landscaping company has fallen short here, because we have grubs. They say the lawn's been diagnosed with grubs, and I know a lot of people have grubs. Their question is, if they independently hire someone to spray the lawn, would it be bad for their regular lawn care? Would they be working against their lawn company if they do
it
that?
It just depends on how the contract reads. I have sympathy for both parties, because the HOAs and the associations hire the cheapest help they can find. And you get what you pay for, honestly. I mean, it's just being blunt. And so they expect these lawn care companies, who have the cheapest bid, to perform over the top in their work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're probably going to need to pay more if you want better service. And so it's not really the time of year to treat for grubs unless they have sod webworm. And so they would need to send some samples up to USU to be tested for sod webworm, and they could treat that this fall. But otherwise, they need to wait for spring, and they would put a preventative down sometime in April. And if they hire the right company, there are some products that will last season long. But just whenever I talk to HOAs, they've got to keep in mind that you get what you pay for.
Yeah, they say that the lawn has been diagnosed with grubs by USU.
Okay.
So that part.
So depending on the diagnosis, they need to wait till spring unless it's sod webworm.
Next person, speaking of sod webworm, this next person says they've been battling sod webworm, bill bugs, grubs, etc. here in Sugar House. They've used products that say they are good for 4 months, and they've treated 3 times over the summer, yet still see evidence that they're coming back once again. Is that a result of the drought, and what can they do to win?
The drought could be making the lawn less able to recover, but they really need to get some samples to USU to find out what it is, because If it is sod webworm, you need to treat, depending on what you're using, a preventative once. But if you're just using the less expensive products that last a week, you will need to treat for 4 or 5 weeks running. And the damage just doesn't magically stop showing up because you damage the grass and it's a week to 10 days later that it dies. And so you've treated and you still have lawn dying. Well, you may have killed whatever was in there, but because the damage is residual, you know, you get a delayed reaction sometimes. But when I see people spending a lot of money on chemicals, the first thing I do is tell them to stop. Send samples up to the USU Diagnostic Lab. Let the Diagnostic Lab see if they can determine what it is, because they're very well, in addition to maybe having grubs, most of the time these samples I'm getting back, they additionally will have fungal diseases that need to be treated. And so get that up there, find out what's going on, and then do the treatment.
All right.
And for that HOA, I'm not trying to criticize anybody. And if they wanted to email... or put a Facebook message up or something, I might see if I can try to help them further just to figure out what's going on. But I just see this conundrum of HOAs and lawn care companies, and it's never an easy thing.
Okay. You can go to the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page and message Ton on Messenger. We're going to take a break, come back with the final segment of the show since we have a shortened edition today due to Cougar football. So stay with us.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Thank you for spending your Saturday with the KSL Greenhouse, a shortened version of the show today to make way for Cougar football. A couple of questions in our remaining couple of minutes here. This next person, Ton, has a black walnut tree approximately 50 feet tall that in the past 2 to 3 years, some of the branches have started to die. Any idea what's going on and what they should do?
There's a couple things. A few years ago, we had some really early hard frost that hurt the walnuts. And so if the branches... if the tree's alive, like the bottom third of the tree's alive and the top two-thirds is dead, that's frost. But if the tree is mostly alive and there's branches dying one at a time, that's probably thousand cankers disease, and it's usually fatal. But they can look up online thousand cankers disease in USU to get a fact sheet. Hopefully it's just the other one to where they need to take out the dead limbs and the tree will recover and grow back. But I'm hoping it's not a thousand cankers.
Okay. Next person has an old oak tree that needs iron. Can they over iron their tree? I'm not sure what they're talking about. What does that mean?
No, it's really hard to put too much iron down. I would wait for spring and use the chelated iron like Miller Farrah Plus, because that's the best product for our alkaline soils.
Next person has an ambrosia cantaloupe that they love, and they'd like to save the seeds, but if they plant those seeds, will they be true to the cantaloupe?
It depends on if there are other cantaloupe adjacent to their garden. Hmm. So if you have bees pollinating that have been into others and they had different varieties, then they'll still come back as cantaloupe, but they won't be ambrosia.
Okay, we have 20 seconds left, so I don't dare ask you another question, Ton. But I want folks to know that we will be back, how about next Saturday from 8 to 11. Never fear, the Greenhouse Show is not going anywhere. And we're going to make way now for the home show, followed by Cougar football. Have a great afternoon.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.